Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Greenville Worker Podcast. Thank you for joining us today on episode 56. I have an awesome guest. The inventor of the Restorer, Robert Kundel Jr., is joining us today on the line. Robert, like I said, is the inventor of the Restorer. He is a full-time employee at a family business. He is a wonderful guy, a nice guy. I've been chatting with him a little bit here. He has invented an awesome product, and the cool thing about it is all the proceeds go to another awesome cause. But I wanted to have Robert on today to tell us a little bit about his invention, his life, things growing up, and super great guy up in Ohio. How are you doing today, Mr. Robert?
Oh, I am doing awesome. You know, it was actually up to 52 today in Ohio, which is a pretty good stretch. You know, we still got snow out there, but we're on the mend. So I'm excited about warm weather and sun. Like this area of Ohio, they have like a lot of like Ravenna arsenal and different stuff like that because it gets a lot of cloud cover. Mm-hmm. So way back when, that's why they built it around here. And we get like 65 days a year of sun. So there's not a lot of sun.
Wow.
So they call it the Rust Belt. Yeah. Yeah, so
I mean,
it's a good day. It's sun. It was sunny. So
yeah, it's of course I'm in South Mississippi, so it's hot every day, even during winter. And we had our 4 days of winter. We had the three drops of snow that we get that blows from the north somehow. I think it's just dropped. Mm-hmm. I think somebody's flying around in a helicopter dropping dry ice or something and calling it snow, but. Today, I think it was 84 degrees, and always humid, though, man. Humid, yeah. Humid. Oh, my goodness gracious. The humidity is something. But it's been beautiful out. It's been nice, and, you know, got some rain coming. So who doesn't enjoy a wonderful rainstorm every afternoon, right? So, man, you every single afternoon, should I say. It's
rains up or down, right?
Yeah, man, it gets... gets pretty crazy. So you are in Northeast Ohio, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm actually looking at you now and I see all kind of Cleveland Brown stuff in the background. And
don't hold that against me now.
No, man.
That just shows how loyal I am.
There you go. You are a loyal man.
Thin, even though through bad times, I always tell my wife to tell her friends, if she's ever going to marry somebody, marry a Browns fan. Because he will never leave you and always be there for you.
No matter what.
How bad things are.
No matter how ugly it gets, he's always going to be right there just taking the abuse.
Absolutely.
So, hey, man, listen, you're talking to a New Orleans Saint guy. I mean, that's where I grew up. The Saints, I mean, come on. But, you know, it took a hurricane to come through here and blow the whole place apart before they went to a Super Bowl and won. And
yeah.
You know,
was it worth it?
Bittersweet memories. Absolutely not.
Absolutely,
absolutely
not.
Absolutely not.
No.
So, man, like I said, you are a full-time employee and you are the inventor of the Restorer, which I just became familiar with over the last few months. And this thing is absolutely crazy. So we're going to talk about it in a little bit because everything down here in the South rust also.
Right.
I mean, you can set. You know, something out tonight and tomorrow, it'll just be incredibly insane rusty. But you come from a pretty big industrial family. You come from growing up, you know, what like you talk about in the Rust Belt, which is where a lot of machinery and things originally came from to begin with. And
mm-hmm.
you came from a big industrial family. Your family, Kundel Industries, has a few different things going on. What mm-hmm. part of Kundel Industries do you work with?
So there's basically two divisions of our company. One division is the construction side, where we manufacture trench boxes. They use them when they dig a ditch for a contractor. They lay sewer and water lines, so they produce we produce a trench box that you put in the ground. Prevents the dirt from caving in on the workers. So that's one side that my brother manages that side. I manage the other side, which is the overhead crane side, like material handling. So we build workstation cranes that'll go in a facility. Stuff like, we've done stuff for like Jay Leno, Uber, Facebook. It's on Trucks TV, if you ever see that TV show.
Oh,
I think it's called Trucks Tech now.
Yes, so they changed.
Yeah, they change the name all the time.
They change the whole, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they change the whole thing, man. It's like Detroit something now, and it just, somebody got in there and messed everything up. But
well, it was owned by a guy who owned RTM Productions.
Yes.
And he sold the company. He retired, sold it to a big company.
There you
go. And so they changed the name, and but they've got a, my crane in there. But we've done stuff for GM, Toyota, Honda, a bunch of big companies. But we started out with like building the construction equipment. My father started the business in the late 80s, $100,000 in debt from being a construction worker. His own construction business, and so it took a dive. And so he started the company, $100,000 in debt in our dining room. And so starting from there, as a contractor, he knew what type of boxes to build because the way he abused him, because he worked for his dad since he was 14 running excavation machinery. So our family's got a history of building and making stuff because his dad was an inventor and actually invented this automatic digging machine. And but my father worked for him, and so he started the business in the family room, I mean the dining room, and then had a company from Germany he was importing boxes from and selling them, and they took the rights of the boxes off of him. And so they gave them to another big manufacturer to sell, and so he thought he'd work with the local engineer, design his own boxes, and that's what they did. And so we started having them produce for us. I was probably about 15 at the time. And then, so he started, got a little shop, and then it was probably 1,500 square feet, little facility, no overhead crane, you know, and so we started, he started producing them. So I started down there, I was probably about 15, 16 years old, and he said, you know, at that age, everybody likes to run around and have fun with your friends and stay out real late, right?
Yeah.
You like to stay out late and sleep in late, and he says, I don't care what you do, you're coming down to work. I don't care if you stand there with your nose in the corner, you're coming to work. You know, so I had to go to work on the weekends, even though I was in school. So work the weekends, go down there. Well, when you get down there, your dad doesn't let you put your nose in a corner, right? You're either pushing a broom or you're running an oxyacetylene torch outside, cutting tubes on a cart, circle cutting stuff and pushing it in by hand and lifting it all up by hand. And so everything was like, I started metalworking, it was probably 15, 16 years old. And so when we moved to, we started our own business, we started producing these trench boxes. Well, we would have so many guys working, but they were always waiting on one crane. So what we ended up doing at our next facility is shut down this big 5-ton crane that was rope operated, right? You pull a rope, it goes one way, pull a rope, it goes another way. Well, so we peeled these overhead. We decided we're going to build our own overhead cranes because we couldn't afford them. You know, a lot of times when I was younger, I lived at home, so I never got a paycheck. You just worked. You went to work for your dad. You come home. That was your money was you got to eat when you got home. So, so we ended up building our own cranes, and that was part of that whole process. Designed all the components, like made sure everything worked, and then somebody come in, saw it, a customer, and then they decided they wanted it, and then, so we built it for them local, and then another one, and then another one. Next thing you know, we land a contract to build for one of the largest crane manufacturers all over the world. And then, so we started building from there, and so we kind of, our product got launched based upon, we couldn't afford to buy a crane. So we just figured we're going to build one, and we're going to build it better. Because that's kind of like our family is, on our website it says a history, you know, like we're innovators. Well, my grandfather was like that, you know, built an automated digging machine. So I don't call myself like an inventor. I'm more of a solutions guy. So if I see the problem, I'm going to make something to make it work. Right. So that's kind of how the two divisions got started. So I run the crane division. My brother runs the trench box division.
You know, the thing about it is, and I talk about this all the time on the podcast, back in the day, your grandfather's day, your father's day, when they needed something, they had to make it. They had to build
it. Absolutely, yeah.
They had to come up with a solution. There was no Amazon. There were no, you know, internet and type things like that. You couldn't run to Home Depot or Lowe's and grab the things you needed. You made mm-hmm. the things that you needed. And by you being slap in the middle of that,
Right.
Man, that was just, oh my goodness gracious, how amazing that must have been. You know, I watch these programs on Amazon, like oh my goodness, I can't remember the, I just watched them last night, but about the founding, Henry Ford and those.
Oh yeah, I
of
watched
guys.
Them. Those are great.
The
amazing,
you know
right.
the guys
founding
who,
fathers, right?
The men who built America. And,
the men who built America, right?
And the thing is, man, as I always look at it and I go, man, I would have loved to been able to live in that time and learn from those guys and the things they did. Now, I wouldn't want to have to live in the lifestyle that some of the
yeah.
people lived, but my lifestyle now, but the knowledge that they had. But that's
absolutely.
Kind of where you were. You were in that of your grandfather and your father just steadily, if something broke, you watched them make it or fix it and build it. And they told you and taught you how to use things and run equipment and, you know, hey, there's a torch over there. Cut a piece of steel. Well, I don't know how to use the torch. Okay, well, learn how to use the torch. You know, those type of situations, and that gets your mind to thinking for years, you know. So to be in that situation is unbelievable. And I've looked at the site for the overhead cranes and stuff, and, man, that's some pretty nice stuff, I must admit. That's, boy, you talk about be nice to have in a shop over a lathe or,
yeah.
or something. You know, my buddy Johnny, he was talking the other day, he turned this big 20-inch bowl blank.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, man, that thing must have weighed 70 pounds. I almost never got it up on the lathe. And I'm like,
right,
man, we need an overhead crane.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Absolutely. So for us, like, you know, I said, we were talking earlier that we started with nothing. You know, I was eating like powdered mashed potatoes, government cheese. You know, there were six of us kids. So there's, I wasn't born with a golden spoon or a silver spoon in my hand, you know. It was not an easy life, you know what I mean? My dad was a construction worker, so he wasn't, you know, Mr. Rogers when you come home, right?
I can imagine.
So he was a pretty well a disciplinarian, you know. And so you stayed in line. If you got out of line, you got cracked. If there were six of us, if somebody as a kid did something wrong, and nobody fessed up, he cracked all of us. You all got cracked. So if you ended up doing something later on, you just didn't say nothing because you're going to let your brother and sister get it back for when they didn't say that he did it as well. So
that's
awesome. What happens when you got, there's six of us. But yeah, absolutely. So with the business, like you said, about learning and training and craft and learning your skill and stuff like that, like I started with metalworking, like I was 15, 16 years old. And so my older brother worked there. Both my older brothers worked there. And when we got a little older, my younger brother worked there. And then at one point I had my cousin working there, my aunt, my mom still works there, my sister-in-law, my brother. It's like a big family. You know, it's like people go on the holidays to go see the family because they have a family reunion. Well, we have one like every day. So
that's incredible.
So in the holidays you try and get away. But it's, I mean, because there's the dynamics of a family and working together and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat because we all kind of found our own niche in the company and making advancements in the product line and stuff like that. So it's come a long way. But like you said, you know, you run into guys that are like, wow, I wish I had a crane over in my garage, but they're industrial cranes and they're so expensive. So one of the things we developed is a product line called SnapTrack. It's a crane that you buy in a cardboard box, you bolt it together, and you can bolt it down to your garage floor. Under like $3,000 or $4,000, and you have a crane in your garage.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked on the design of that. The whole thing was mine from the beginning, and I got it in. It's in with Jay Leno, was on American Hot Rod. It was with Jesse James and all these different guys because I'm like, I put it out there. I'm like, hey, I don't have a lot of marketing money, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll put a product in your shop. You give me some airtime or you give me some exposure. And Jay Leno, he did like, if you ever go on his site or my site, it might be on there. He did like a half an hour video on my product and he absolutely loved it. The guy, believe it or not, Jay Leno called me 3 times to thank me about the product. They loved it so much. At first they got it and they weren't sure what they were going to do with it. He says after they got it, they literally have to make appointments to use it. So I talked to his shop manager, Bernard. This guy, he's really cool. He knows what he's doing. But so the crane actually was funny because I was at a baseball game coaching my son's team and I was on first base you know, my son was probably 10 years old and I'm coaching the first base and I had my wife give her my phone. And so I had a new phone. I don't know if it was like an iPhone at the time. And the phone rings and she doesn't know how to answer it. And so it goes to voicemail. And then I checked my voicemail in between innings and stuff like that. She said, somebody called you. And here it is, Jay Leno left a voicemail on my cell phone.
Oh, man.
And my wife didn't answer it. So, and I had got, we got back in the car and I called him back and I talked to Bernard. I says, hey, this is Robert. You know, I just missed Jay's call. And so I said, well, I'm going to go home. Here's my, just call him, have him call my home phone. I'll be at home. So I go home and I'm cooking them out on the grill, you know, making hot dogs or hamburgers, what everybody else does, right, when you get home in the summer. And my wife comes out. She's got the phone in her hand and her mouth is on the floor almost. She's like, it's Jay Leno on the phone. And I'm like, okay. So I talked to him and he was really cool, you know, just like you and me talking. Yeah. You know, it's like a neighbor to you, you know what I mean?
Nice.
We were just shooting the breeze for 15, 20 minutes, talking about cars and kids, all that stuff. And I ended up going back to work, and he left a voicemail at work. So this guy, he's really down to earth. He called me 3 times just to thank me for the product.
Yeah.
So they did a video and took pictures of him next to the product and all that stuff. So
yeah, I just checked it out on the site, man. And it's that's a really awesome solution. So they'll definitely be a link in the blog post. And in the description, so you guys can go check out these cranes and things like that, because that is a real viable solution for some shops. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, man, you know, as we get a little older, and even before then, if you have any kind of sense, use machinery to pick stuff up if you can, versus picking up big logs and bowl blanks. I mean, I'm not 20 anymore, and sometimes I seem to forget that, and it gets me in trouble, you know. So. Man, it's so cool that you've had this kind of exposure to just the industrial element. Mm. I really just geek out on industrial and the operation and the mechanics of things. I was an auto mechanic for about 16 years for Chrysler, starting at 17 years old. And, you know, it just, there's always been something about the mechanics of things, the way things work, how things are put together and stuff like that. So, you know, you're in the middle of all this stuff. You're out here trying to run this crane division. How in the world did you decide there's a problem? We have a problem. We have something that is an issue with rust or debris. I'm assuming that's how this problem came about, or the solution as the restorer itself. Was the problem with the materials you guys were using for the cranes, or...
Yeah, they were like a mixture of both, because we do the construction equipment, so you get a lot of big pipe. For the cranes, you get a lot of big beams, structural beams for our top runners or our, you know, our motorized crane systems. Because we have some light duty, anywhere from like 500 pound up to 10 ton freestanding. So, and so our company was smaller. It's a smaller family business. We have about 50 employees. We probably have about 70,000 square feet, something like that. Under roof, and probably like 30 some welders and stuff like that, guys welding. So I'm around it all the time, you know. I'm used to being, they call it flashed, right? So if you walk by, you don't want to get flashed. But so we'd have a lot of beams and pipe that we'd get in, and they'd have a lot of surface rust on them. And so what we were using was an angle grinder with a wire wheel cut brush. I'm sure everybody's used one, right? So what happens is, what it ends up doing, you got a donut-sized brush, and picture trying to clean a round pipe, 16 inches diameter, 27 feet long, take all the rust off it. You know how many hours it takes to clean that off?
Yeah,
with a little,
I can imagine.
With a little donut, and then it just throws debris everywhere in the shop. So you're not really getting rid of the rust, you're just displacing the rust. You're taking it from on the pipe, and you're throwing it all over your shop.
Right.
And so, and then we have the beams, and so we have to dress and clean up beams all the time. Prior to where we're at better now, that we can bring stuff in the facility while it's clean, but before we'd have it sitting outside. So I thought, man, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I thought, if I could use a sweeper, like an upright sweeper on a beam, I could suck up the rust. And then all I was going to do is put a wire wheel in it, right? And so I thought, well, what am I going to do for pipe, or what am I going to do for edges, or getting into the flanges and the corners and the radiuses and all that stuff? You know, I'm like, what did the sweeper industry do to solve this problem? Well, they made a Dirt Devil. So Dirt Devil's handheld sweeper. So first thing I did, I went home that night, I took my wife's Dirt Devil and I ripped it apart. Okay, it hasn't been put back together yet. So. But it's the Dirt Devil is, it's a great idea, but it just, there's just not enough power. You know, for guys who like tools and you want power, Dirt Devil is just not strong enough. So I had this little roller and I figured there's not enough roller exposure and it's not going to be powerful enough. So I thought, I got to build something like the Dirt Devil that I could put a wire wheel in. So now you're thinking, I have to build something. How am I going to build something? So I need a power source, right? What's the most readily available power sources? Well, a drill or an angle grinder. Angle grinders, they produce in the millions. So I thought, I'm going to get an angle grinder. Now I have a power source for $20 at Harbor Freight. So I went down to Harbor Freight, bought an angle grinder for like $19.99 or whatever it is, a Chicago Electric, I think. And I took it. As soon as I took it, I ripped the head of it off, you know, the gear housing, ripped it off. And I thought, now I have a power source. Now all I have to do is power up a roller. So I worked with a buddy of mine who works for us. He was a tool and die operator. His name's Rich Chalet. He used to be a tool and die operator over at Delphi Packard Electric. So this guy's one of these maker guys before they were makers, right? And so he builds anything. And so I says, okay, well, I'm going to sketch this up. So I sketched it up in AutoCAD. I contacted a custom wire wheel manufacturer. It was like $150. They spiral wound a wire wheel for me, 4-inch diameter, 4 inches long, with a bore through it. And so we worked. I worked with Rich, and we made a frame, an aluminum handle on the front. I thought, what do we do for the rear handle? I thought, I want to suck this stuff up into a sweeper or vacuum, you know. So I thought, I'm going to make the back handle a tube like you would have. Like an exhaust, because you get an upright sweeper. We had a canister sweeper at the time, which I think I still have in the basement. It's like when we got married, my wife calls it my Frankenstein because I fix everything on it. It's got different color wheels, different color switches. Anyway, it has a tube that goes up through the center, and that's the handle. It sucks it up right through your hand. So I thought, I'm just going to turn the back handle into a pipe, you know, like an exhaust pipe. And sure enough, he went back. We put it all together. He took it home. He powered it up. You know, and he used it on a rusty block, engine block, and he powered it up with a wire wheel. And I could hear him on the phone, because the first time I heard it running was on his cell phone. He held it up to his cell phone and let it run, and he videotaped it, and it worked amazing. And then he attached it to a shop vac, and there was absolutely no rust or debris in the air. And I'm like, so now I'm super pumped about the product. You know, and so we bring it back to the shop, and I don't even get to use it very long, and I go to a trade show, like I think it was an IMTS trade show for our cranes. So I ended up next to a booth for fine tools, and Ernie Leopold, he was like one of the managers of the product lines and stuff like that, and I was talking to him about it. At the time, fine tools, they had the Multimaster. See, they were the first ones to come out with the Multimaster. It was actually an invention from a guy over in Germany, and they licensed his invention. They didn't know what they were going to do with it yet, but they licensed it, you know, and even though they weren't sure of all the possibilities or everything you could do with it, so their patent just had run out, and people were starting to bring all theirs out to the market, right? Everybody's Multimaster oscillating tool is what they call it. Basically, the oscillating tool is a electric razor. It's just vibrating head back and forth. It's the same concept as an electric razor. And so I presented it to them, and they had the tool air freighted to Germany. And so it was at Fine Tools when I first made it. I didn't even have a patent on it, just had a non-disclosure with them. And Fine Tools made me, there's a gentleman over there, Rainier Warnicki, he made an offer to me for like, it was like 0.5% or 1% of wholesale, which manufacturing cost. It'd be like pennies or something like that, right? And he's like, but you're going to need to apply for the patent, because we have a hard time getting a patent over in the U.S. because we're a German company. Now, mind you, Fine Tools, they build amazingly high quality tools. I mean, these are pro tools. And there was guys there that loved it, guys there that thought it was too niche, you know, but they had made me an offer, so I had turned it down, and because it was so low. And then I had made I made another tool. I mean, this tool I made was a leak in my ceiling from a shower. And so I had, not to get off subject, but I made this other tool like a hand wrench. And this hand wrench had basically, it was a boxed wrench opening, no handle. You know, the handles, I put hinges on the side, like a periscope. So I got up and I made my own tool to tighten this drain ring on the shower, because you can't get up in there with channel locks. You can't get up there with a wrench. And so I made my own tool, you know, off of our plasma, and I tightened this thing up and I threw it in a cupboard, you know, because I did the job in like 3 seconds. So I thought, I just made myself a jig or a little fixture and stuff like that. Well, I ended up talking to somebody and I ended up selling the idea to Ridge Tool in Elyria. Well, one time when I was talking to them, I was talking to them about, because Ridge Tool is in Elyria, and they license their name Rigid, right? Tektronic Industries is TTI, that builds Rigid Miami and Milwaukee. Well, they use Rigid's name on their tools. And so he's like, hey, I got this guy named Mike Farah you should talk to. So he might be interested. So I ended up contacting Mike Farah. And I don't know if you know who Mike Farah is, but he's head of TTI North America, Rigid Miami and Milwaukee. So yeah, then so I presented to them and the tool. I presented the tool to them, and so they, the guy he had connected me with was a guy, product manager down at Rigid. And once they saw it, they're like, we want it in every Home Depot by spring. So they had me come down to Anderson, South Carolina, demoed the tool, they put the Rigid stickers on it, they took it out to painting contractors, did all the work. Now, mind you, my original tool is like the beast. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it, on my website or on my Instagram post, it's a beast, right?
Yeah, it's like a test. I have little brothers that move furniture for a living, and when they get an old piece, they call it a test model because it's so heavy and so big.
Yeah.
So basically that's what this is. So they're dealing with a test model at this point, right?
This is a test model at that point. And so they had it and they showed it. Now I could always see what it was going to be and what it was going to become, you know, as, cause it was my idea, you know, and bring it to market. And so, it was actually there for 2 years and, they couldn't build it cheap enough for Home Depot. So after 2 years, they tried making an offer to the buyer over at Home Depot, and he had to turn it down because they wanted it at like a $99 price point, which TTI couldn't hit. So all my plans, everything I invested, 2 years of waiting on them, and then it couldn't happen. So people are like, why didn't you try Rigid or Milwaukee? Well, I did. You know what I mean? And we tried. I've gone down many of those roads, but so he couldn't build it cheap enough, so I didn't give up because I had like interest from like the Pentagon and the military, because they spend $23 billion a year on corrosion. Wow. So I had a contact, and I'm like, my dad's like, just build it yourself, right? That's my dad. He's like, just build 50 of them. Make a mold yourself and just build it yourself. You know, that's him. He's like, don't build a ton of them. Don't go to big corporate America. You know, he's like, just start building them and selling them. That's my dad, you know. He's like, if you don't have it, just build it.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm not going to give up because there was a lot of interest. So I started, I had a lot of connections on LinkedIn. And so I connected with this guy and Stanley Black & Decker, he worked for. And I said, hey man, can I buy motors from you? I thought, I got to find a source for motors. And so the guy messaged me back. He says, well, what are you using it for? Can I see us? I said, yeah, I got a website. So I showed him. And at the time I just had mock-ups. Like they were like art sketches and stuff like that, you know? And so he saw it, and as soon as he saw it, he says, would you license that technology to us? And here, come find out, he's president of consumer products for Stanley Black & Decker.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, let's talk. You know, make me an offer. And so he made me an offer, took 4 months negotiations. They wanted every brand, multiple brands, multiple sizes. They were going to help me with my Wellington brand and bring it out. And so I ended up going down there and meeting with them, and they had me, my son, and my wife, and we did dinner out to eat, and we had a catered lunch, and it was a big signing, and met everybody in Towson, Maryland, and driven around to different locations, and so it was awesome. I'm like, man, this is it. You know, I hit Stanley Black & Decker. They do DeWalt, they do Bostitch, they do Porter Cable, they do Black & Decker, they do Stanley. You know, they got about five brands, and now they just bought Craftsman now recently, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, he's multiple sizes, multiple brands. It's going to be all over. I'm like, I worked out a deal to license my patented technology, my invention. And then 1 month before it was going to go to their engineers to start actually applying funds, right, to designing it. Because I had originally outsourced a guy to develop my 3D model, my solid model. And I spent about $2,500. I sourced the guy out, and he basically built a model that you could almost build from, right? Based on my design and all my sketches, my AutoCAD drawings and stuff like that. And so about a month before it was supposed to go to launch with them, like start applying funds, because if you get a product in there they like, it's a two-year product road before it comes to market. So something they got, if you pitch it to them now, they like it, they invest, it's probably 2 years before it makes it to market. And so they do a lot of research and testing. I mean, I've been in there, they got a lot of testing labs, and they do it right. I mean, they do it right for sure. You know, and they got groups and people, this matrix of people that are all involved in this build is just amazing. You got an Excel spreadsheet is like as far as your room, as wide as your room, and as tall as it. You know, and there's all these little cells, and everybody's got to do all their work, and it's quite a feat, you know. So we were about a month from going to there, and what happened is the guy who I signed with, he actually got moved to business development patent licensing, and the lady moves in from marketing. She takes over. She puts all projects on hold. Yeah, and so then she comes back. She calls me up. It was like a month later, and she tells me, they're not going to pursue it because there's other stuff in the category that could compete with and stuff like that. And there's a lot of things. I'm not going to share too many things.
Right. We understand.
Okay. So they put a stop to it. But anyway, the guy I'd signed with, he's like, don't give up. I really believe in this. He moved on to a different apartment. He helped me make a connection with a guy that used to work for Black & Decker at the time, and this guy works for the manufacturer overseas that actually builds a lot of the tools for 200 OEM brands. So now I'm connected with this company overseas that builds for all these power tool companies. And so I proposed it to them, and the owner loved it, and he's like, okay, let's do a deal. So now we do a deal. It's like a global deal. And so they build it for me, and then what I do, we took it, after the product was finished, we go back, and now we basically got a finished tool. It's my design and everything like that, and they build it, they've invested in the tooling and the molds, and now we come back to Porter Cable and those guys and say, hey, we got a finished product, what do you think? They're like, well, it's still going to be a long time before we bring it to market because they have to develop and invest a lot of resources, but they said, we believe in it. We think it's a great product now. They can see it, right? But they don't see themselves being able to meet the timeline. So what they ended up doing is licensing their brand name to me. So I ended up back with the guy I originally signed with because he moved to a different department. And now I license the brand names Porter Cable and Black & Decker. So the way it works is I have it manufactured for me. I sell it into Lowe's and HomeDepot.com and Walmart.com and Amazon and Rockler and Woodcraft and Hartville Hardware and all these different companies. And then I turn around and pay them a royalty quarterly based upon using a name. So when you see it, it looks like it comes from Porter Cable, but it actually comes from me because I have to meet all the same standards. I have to have the same insurance as they do, which is like $24,000 a year for $15 million liability insurance.
Right.
It's not cheap. You know, and so I have to have all my packaging approved by them, all my graphics, all my testing, it's almost like it comes from them. So when you buy the product, you're buying a product that they approve, you know? So it's not something, cheap knockoff that I'm just getting a sticker put on. Believe me, they've done all the testing. They've done all the research. I have to have my manuals approved, or anything I do has to be tested and approved by them. So it's a Stanley Black & Decker approved product. So yeah, that's like taking you down a long road there. It was probably about 7 years to get it to market from when I started. So it's been a long road, a lot of no's along the way. But I'm a resilient guy. My mom, one time we had this birthday party for me, and everybody was given one word to describe me, and my mom's word was tenacious. So it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing.
Yeah, for sure, man. And you know, the thing about it is I knew that, you know, it was difficult to get products to market, but I had no earthly idea that it was like that. I mean, that's incredible.
I didn't even tell you the half of the
stuff. Yeah, I could imagine. I mean, I could see the look on your face as you're telling me about these stories and about, you know, not wanting to get too deep into personal things, but that's just incredible that you saw it to the point where it is and that it is where it is today. So any idea roughly how many of these things you think have been sold? I was just curious.
I'm about the first year, probably about 20,000 units.
Wow.
So when I started my business, you know, my dad still tells me it's my side business because I still work for him.
Right.
He's like, he doesn't want me to leave. He wants me to always work for him. He's like, that's just your side business.
Right, right.
I'm like, well, it's pretty substantial. So what I ended up doing, so now I work with this guy. He used to work for Black & Decker, and so now we work together, and he works with the factory and works. He knows all the people in the industry. He has all the connections with all these power tool people. So I work with him, and then actually work with another guy that used to work for Rockwell. He was a vice president of sales and marketing. So he was no longer Rockwell, which is Positech. They build Rockwell and Works power tools. So now he works with me too. So now I got these two guys that are kind of powerhouses. I've been in the power tool industry for 20 some years, and they absolutely love the product. And so I had the product pitched and basically sold on the idea into Lowe's and Home Depot. They just wanted a brand. They wanted the tool, they were interested, but I had to have a brand for them. Like if I was going to go to Home Depot and sell it, I had to have Milwaukee or I had to have Rigid behind it. If I wanted to be in Lowe's, I had to have somebody like a DeWalt or somebody like a Porter Cable and stuff like that. Package it under their brand because they don't want a one-off tool. There's not going to be a market because nobody's going to know what it is. Nobody's going to trust it. So that's how I got kind of them to buy into it because I already had the big box store buyers believing in the product. They just wanted a brand. So I think last year we sold about 20,000 units. It's funny because I only started my business to get to where I'm at with like $4,000. I started with, my sister worked for a patent attorney in San Francisco, like one of the largest patent attorneys in California. And she used to write patents and inspect them or read them over. And she's super technical. She's just amazing at that stuff. So she actually wrote my patent. A guy at work did my drawings. And then I did all the Google research. And we filed my patent for like $1,200 online.
Wow.
And then I bought her an iPad for doing the work. So I had about $1,600 in it and then about $2,500 in a model. So this whole thing started with about $4,000. And the manufacturer overseas actually built the product for me ahead of time without no upfront cost. And I didn't have to pay them till like 10 days after Lowe's paid me. So to get to the point where I'm at was crazy because to me, there's so many ways that God's done, so many things been put in place all along the way that it's like hard to believe that I was approved as a vendor to Lowe's as a one-person company. I didn't have no bank account. I didn't have anything. You know, I didn't have a Dun & Bradstreet. I had zero money, you know, in my business. And I started with $4,000. And here I am after the first year, selling 20,000 units.
Wow.
You know? So yeah, it's an amazing story. It's hard to believe some of the stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's incredible, man. And on top of that, you know, you also have other things that are really close to your heart as far as what you do with, you know, proceeds from the money, from the sales and things like that. Do you care to touch on some of that with us, to let us about the pastoral retreat center and things like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's like during this time when I had this tool, it was come about, I was like, man, I'm going to take it easy. You know, you're thinking, I'm not going to have to work for our family business anymore. I'm just going to collect a royalty check and stuff like that. And I was like, getting to the point of going to work, you know, everybody would go to work and sometimes you just, you know what the day is going to bring. And you don't see anything interesting. You don't see anything new. You almost dread going to work. You're like, oh, I don't want to go up. I don't want to go. You know, nothing new is going to happen. And just felt like, I don't know, I've always felt like I'm called to something so much bigger at the time. I'm like, I always feel like I felt like I'm supposed to be doing something that I wasn't doing, you know? And it was weird because the craziest thing is, like, I woke up, like, God, you know, I tell people God gave me a vision, or he showed me what he wants me to do with my life. And it was crazy because I woke up weeping, like just weeping. You know, I didn't wake up and think about what I was doing. I just woke up weeping, and I'm like, I was trying to talk to my wife and I couldn't catch my breath. I'm trying to breathe. I'm like, you know, this had never happened to me before, you know, nothing like this. And, you know, when my son was born, which is like 97, I decided I can't do it all on my own. I'm just going to give my life to God. If he'll have me, you know, take me and turn my life around, you know. But it was at this time where, you know, God called me to minister to ministers. You know, I'm like, I don't even feel qualified to be a pastor or minister, you know, let alone called to be a minister to ministers. And he showed me, he wants me to build this retreat center. And I'm like, I'm blown away. You know, I mean, my whole body is shaking. I'm in the shower and I'm trying to talk to my wife and I can't breathe. And she's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, you know, I'm trying to tell her and explain it to her. And I finally got it out, you know, and I had sketched this thing down on this this little card that was for my birthday. It's the Good News Retreat Center and Do Not Stop Preaching and stuff like that. And I don't even know what it was all about at the time, you know. And so I put it all down and, you know, over the years, you know, over a short period of time, I come to find out that, you know, like 1,500 to 1,800 pastors leave the ministry every month. They get burned out. Some of them even committed suicide because of their job, which is really crazy. You know, a lot of times people take the pastor or the church for granted and stuff like that. And I was, you know, growing up, I always thought, I give the money to the church. This pastor uses it. I don't know what he's doing. You know, I never trusted that whole thing when I was younger. But then I got older and, like, God turned my life around. And I thought, I don't think, if I give the money to the church, God's going to, if they mess it up, it's on them. It's not, I'm not worried about the pastor because he's the one who's going to be in trouble if he doesn't spend the money right. But yeah, so God gave me this vision to build this pastoral retreat center. So I'm thinking all this time, I'm like, how am I going to build this? How am I going to build this? Well, this whole time, and then this thing comes along with TTI. Then it falls apart, you know, and I'm just devastated, you know, from years of thinking this is the plan now. And then I do this Stanley Black & Decker thing, and then that gets ripped out from under me. And I'm just like, I'm at my end. I'm like, God, I don't know what to do. I've been doing everything, and every time I get this deal, it's just ripped out from underneath me. And what am I supposed to do, you know? And then I end up getting this deal and launching it. Now, potentially, I'm globally, and I'm working with a guy that's going to be globally selling the tool. And it's crazy because the restorer is used to make the old new again. You know what I mean? And it's a restoration tool. And that's what this retreat center is for, a place of restoration to take the old and make it new again. You know, to me, it's like it's named the restorer. You know, it's a carpenter's tool. Jesus is a carpenter. The place is a place of restoration, the retreat center. And all this stuff adds up. If you hold my tool up on the wall, it's in the shape of a cross. I'm not trying to sell it because of my values. the tool is going to sell itself. I'm just, the story is what it is. You know, God's given me this tool to build retreats there. So I'm going to, I haven't taken a dime of sales from the Porter Keyboard store or anything. I work a full-time job to make a living. All that money goes in the bank to save up to build this retreat center, to buy property or buy inventory or buy new rollers and expand the lineup for everybody so you have more awesome, cool rollers. But yeah, I haven't taken any income, you know? So it's just like God's connected me with all these people along the way. You know, when I was younger, I was used to have a dream, like I was in this big building and, you know, I was sketching it out, you know, or just looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know why God showed me this big building, like I'm in this big house. And I always had the same dream that I was over like this balcony looking down at all these guys and these tables, and there was this elevator or whatever. And I ended up meeting a guy online because I was looking for pictures for my website, retreat centers, and I was watching this video of this guy, and this guy is talking. He's a principal, and he's talking about different teaching kids differently. It was like a different school. It was like one of those charter schools. And feel like God's telling me, this guy's your architect. And I'm like, what? I'm like, are you serious? This guy's a principal. So I thought, okay, he's the architect. So I'm going to test this. So I'm going to send him an email. So I sent him an email, and this guy calls me, and he wants to talk to me. So I said, okay, let's talk. So he calls me, and he says, did my family put you up to this? I says, no, why? I said, I feel like God's told me you're the architect. He said, because I've been drawing retreat centers since I've been 7 years old. When there were kids on the bus playing video games, he was drawing retreat centers. This is a guy that was a principal that I happened to see in a video that God, I feel like God told me he's your architect. Here, this kid's been drawing retreat centers since he's been 7 years old on the bus.
Wow.
And he's got this guy, so I'm talking to him about it, and he's like blown away. His brother was in this band, Cademan's Call, which is a Christian group and stuff like that. And he's got a lot of Christian, or these, a lot of these guys that are in the music industry. And so I was telling about the retreat center, and he has this guy, his friend, this young guy is an architect. So he draws it out in AutoCAD, and he shows it to me, and it's identical to what I drew like a year and a half earlier myself, that I always used to see when I was younger in my dream. I showed my wife this. I said, this is what I always envisioned ever since I was young. I didn't know what it was at the time. So he sends me this AutoCAD drawing. I have both. And I showed my wife. I said, these are identical. It's an identical thing that this guy drew that I had been thinking about, you know, all my life since I was younger. And I says, the only difference is, I told him, I says, the only difference is there's an elevator on the top right-hand side where I was standing. He says, Robert, we had an elevator in there. We took it out because we didn't think you could afford it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, my company is called Wellington. My son, you know, it was like a year later after I named my company Wellington, and it was like Wellington beat Napoleon, Butter, Waterloo, and all this different stuff. I just felt like God called me to call Wellington. Well, my son ends up going to college over in New Zealand. He's like, well, Dad, you never guess where I want to go. Where his friends over there that was come over for visiting, and he ends up going to college, and he's like, you'll never guess what town. I says, what? He says, Wellington. So now my son's over in Wellington College, I mean, Wellington, New Zealand, at University of Victoria, and I'm telling this guy at Lowe's, because I had this meeting with this guy at Lowe's, and he was the buyer. They were the first ones to buy in. They bought like almost 14,000 units the first shot. So we're having a big lunch and stuff like that, and I'm telling the story about my son in New Zealand and my name and my company and all this stuff. And he says, Robert, before I leave, I want to tell you the area I live at in Charlotte is called Wellington. You know, it's like I've always felt called like down to the Charlotte area for people. For some reason, people say, and they're like, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I just feel called to be down there. You know, there's times in your life where you know that you know that you know you're supposed to do something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And here it turns out the first company to license, or the first company to buy into the tool and launch it, is Lowe's. And where they headquarter? Right down by Charlotte.
That's incredible.
There's so many more things I could tell you,
right?
That would just blow you away. But yeah, it's been a it's been an awesome journey of faith and trials and tribulations and perseverance. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to go through, you know, and you can't give up. You got to have everybody has to have faith in something. You mean whether it's faith in God or whether it's faith in your family or faith in something you do or anything you do. When you get in the car, you're taking a leap of faith. You're going to make it home.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that's what keeps me going. That's what drives me with this tool. Like if I didn't have this end game for me, I wouldn't have done this tool because it's been way too long, way too hard, way too much work to do it just for me. You know, I've got an end game that's, so all the money's going to go to that. And I don't have the property yet, but kind of trying to work on that. It was crazy because my grandmother, she's like, go down and visit my friend Lucille. She's in North Carolina. I'm like, my grandmother was 99 at the time. She's like, because I'm going down to South Carolina to see my sister-in-law and her daughter graduate or something, or son graduating. So I'm like, okay, Grandma, I'll drive down there, and I'm going to see your friend that's like 100 years old, too. You don't tell your grandma no, and she's 99 years old, right? So I go down and talk to this Lucille, and she's on these back roads of around Charlotte area and stuff like that, and I get up on this hill, and we pull up to her house, and I walk in. She's like, I heard you want to buy property for your church. I'm like, no, I don't know what my grandma told you, but that's not the case, and I don't know if I'm going to have anything in common with this lady. She's 100 years old and she can even hear me or understand me. And this lady's in her, it's crazy because her and my grandmother were best friends ever since they were little up in Ohio. She ends up moving to Florida, building condos, then ends up buying this property in North Carolina. And she's up on this hill and stuff like that. So I go tell her, I says, no, I don't want to buy property for my church, but I'll tell you my story. So I told her the story that what God wants me to do with my life that I think he's told me to do. And everything makes sense. A restoration. It's a place of, you know, the retreat center and the pastor and all this stuff, you know. And so I tell her the story and she says, you're scaring me. I says, why? She says, God woke her up from a dream 8 months earlier and told her properties to go to a retreat center.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. This lady owns 300 acres, which is like half of a mountain.
Yeah.
She's one son that's ailing. She's got no grandkids. She's got no husband. Her son has no wife. So there's really nobody for the property to go down to, you know, pass it down to. So I'm trying to work out those details. It's crazy because she told me her two grandfathers were pastors too. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, man. It's incredible. And there are no coincidences, and everything has definitely been for the reasons, you know, that you've talked about. And that's really incredible, man. It really is.
Yeah, it's not about me. It's not about my abilities and what I've been able to do. I'm just an average guy. You know, I'm just trying to do what I feel like I've been called to do. You know, I'm called to, you know, be humble, serve people, put people above myself, before me. You know, I don't want to be prideful or arrogant. I mean, nobody wants to talk to a person like that, right? And so I've had so many people tell me no or never answer, never respond. And I told myself, I'm never going to be like that person. I'm never going to be the person that doesn't answer an email from a customer. Or I'm never going to be the person that doesn't take the time to talk to somebody, you know, when they're having a problem with their tool or something like that, or they need something. You know, there's too many people in the world that do that, you know, when it's all about them. Well, to me, it's not about me, and I haven't been able to do this in my own might and own strength because I would have never made it this far.
Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. So now these things are basically, the Restorer tool itself is available all over the world now, correct?
Yeah, actually, we're setting up Amazon Europe, and so we're trying to get that set up. There's a guy, I think it's Pug or something like that on Instagram. I apologize if I mess that up, but he actually had one. A friend of his bought one in the States and flew it to the UK. So he actually owns one and uses it in the UK. Another guy bought one, had it flown over somehow, and he's got it in Hungary. I've had like Russia, Ireland, Portugal, Trinidad, Tobago, Brazil, all kind of countries interested, you know, and requests coming in from Instagram. So it's just amazing. The Instagram community is just, you know, you've got this Facebook and you got Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, but they're diametrically opposed, right? Facebook, you post something on there about your opinion or what you believe, and everybody just attacks you, right? Because you can't say your opinion. So I don't voice my opinion about anything because you're just, if somebody doesn't agree with me, I'm perfectly fine with that. You know, but there's a lot of people that if you disagree with them, they're going to hunt you down, right?
Yeah.
But on Facebook, well, Instagram is total opposite. The maker community is just unbelievably supportive and loving and caring and, you know, always have positive comments to people and always building each other up. So this maker community is just unbelievable, you know, and I'm blessed to be a part of that. Just coming in within like the past year and a half to see all this amazing stuff, you know, built by these guys. I mean, all these names and all these people that have been in Instagram and big makers for the community for a long time. I was never aware of who they are, what they do. So big names or people that it doesn't intimidate me because I don't know who they are. Right.
Right. Of course.
So I've done stuff for some big name people, but I mean, to me, everybody's equal. You know, nobody's above or nobody's better than anybody else. I didn't go to see Jay Leno at his when we put the crane in his shop. I just sent my technician out. You know, to me, he's another guy. You know, I don't get starstruck by people. And there was a guy I met on Instagram, Brian Lane with Wooden Creations. This guy he's like 6'7". He's ginormous, but he's absolutely hilarious. I mean, all the stuff he posts. I don't know how many followers he's got, but he's the one who turned me on to all this with the makers and all these guys and connected me with a bunch of guys and kind of helped me, you know, a lot of messages say, hey, you should connect with this guy or you should do this or you should do that. So he was really key in helping me, you know, get out and being able to meet a lot of people and stuff like that. So I'm just trying to bring an awesome product out to people at a reasonable price and stand behind it, you know, I mean, 100%. So yeah, launching it overseas. I mean, that's what I'm working on now. Met with a professor at a local university. He's a global trade export professor. And so he wants to start selling it, you know, overseas too. So yeah. And I'm actually in contract negotiations with a third brand for launching under a third brand other than Black & Decker, because right now it's out of Porter Cable and Black & Decker. So I can't divulge who the third brand is yet, so because we haven't worked out any details and stuff like that, but you might see that coming out too. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Good stuff, man. Sounds like you got a lot still going on and plenty happening with the Restore. So, you know, there'll definitely be links in the description and in the blog post where you guys can go and find one, check one out, go visit one at the store, you know, and look around on Instagram. There's plenty of people that have them, you know what I mean, and use these things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a guy, I think it's Inspire Woodcraft. He does, like, stuff that colored wood, where he strips out the soft wood and colors it and uses a Restore, and he just does amazing, amazing work. I was at the Hartville Hardware Show. I was showing people that come and bought the tool because that's what they were trying to do. I'm like, check these guys out. Check these guys out on Instagram, you know. And people are like, how do you do this? How do you have this job? I'm like, well, honestly, you know, I work from like 7:30 in the morning to 11:30 at night. So it's like every day of the week except for Sunday just about. So it's a lot of work, you know, have family-owned business and trying to launch the tool and make a company, you know, and just – to me, I want to stand behind the product because I believe in it, number one. Number two, if I spent $100 on a tool, I'd want somebody to stand behind it, you know? And so you just do unto others as you have them do unto you. You know, that's my thing, you know?
Well, we appreciate you not only inventing a cool tool, you know, a cool solution for many problems and something that can be used to make art. You know, we appreciate you being an honest person and somebody that stands behind it. You know, the last question I normally ask people on my podcast is what's your favorite tool, but
I knew that was coming.
I mean, If you don't say that, I mean, if you don't say the restore, I mean, come on, man. I mean, what else are you going to say? It's kind of like, you know, when I was back in the car dealership back in the day, and this old guy that used to own one of the dealerships, he was like, you know, I had this friend that had a Ford dealership, but he just, all he wanted to drive was Cadillacs. And I just never understood that. I mean, you drive a Ford. If you own a Ford dealership, you drive a Ford, you know, and so obviously your favorite tool is the Restore, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I'm a little biased towards the Restore, but you know, there's a lot of cool stuff out there. I mean, to me, I'm an average, you know, I got to work a job, you know, and stuff like that. So everybody's got a drill, right? Or everybody's got an impact. And, you know, to me, I love DeWalt quality tools. You know, I can't afford, well, I mean, I want to say I can't afford, but if I don't use something like Fist Tools, just amazing brand, or Fine Tools is an amazing brand. But, you know, if you're not using it every day and you don't do that for a living and you're not building furniture, it's hard to spend the money to do that. But for an average guy like myself, you know, that works on the weekend and stuff, maybe building a deck or doing an addition or something like that, I'm a fan of DeWalt, honestly. And their little impact drivers are just beasts. I mean, I built a deck for my sister and the thing just runs and runs and runs. You know, and they're so small and light and compact. That's what I want to do with my tool. My next goal with the Restore is cordless version, you know, and then air powered, you know. So, I mean, I've got, there's a product road for the tool. I mean, I've got some rollers here right in front of me as we talk. I just got received them today, a woolen flap wheel and stuff like that. That I got new rollers launching, but What I love is the Instagram community, what you guys are doing with it, and you come back and give me feedback and say, hey, Robert, you need to do a roller for this or do a roller for that, because what drives the innovation is not me, it's you guys. It's the maker community, because those are the guys using it. Those are the girls using it. Those are the ones that matter, that makes a difference. It's not about what I want to come out with. You know what I mean? What's important to me? It's what's important to the user, you know, and that's how I like to look at it. So
yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, my brother. Well, our time here is ended, and I just can't thank you enough for taking the time away from your family, away from your busyness that you have going on, and spending with us, just letting us know, you know, how this thing was conceived, and just your story growing up and your faith, and all of that means a lot to us, all the listeners. We like to know about folks that are around us in our community, and I truly appreciate you for what you are and for what you stand for, my man. I truly appreciate you hanging out with me today.
Thanks for having me on, Donnie. I really appreciate it. Like I said, you do an amazing, amazing job for the maker community, and it's definitely much appreciated. So don't ever change who you are. So you're awesome the way you are.
Thank you, sir. I truly appreciate that. Thank you guys for listening to episode 56 of the Green Woodworker Podcast. I truly appreciate it. I thank you guys for sharing this with all your friends. I appreciate the patrons, and I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for all you do for the podcast. And until we see you guys on the next episode, thank you for listening so much. We'll see you later.